next presenter is Ken Gonzalez-Day, who lives and works in Los Angeles. Working with history, fiction, documentary, photography, studio photography, special effects, artifice, and cultural critique, he calls into question the reliability of what has been handed down and received as historical fact. His book, entitled Lynching in the West, 1850 to 1935, was published in 2006 and was nominated for a Pulitzer Prize. He will be a visiting scholar at the Getty Research Institute this fall. Gonzalez-Day is an associate professor and chair of the Department of Art at Scripps College. Please help me welcome Ken Gonzalez-Day to the stage.
Chicano aren't dead? What does this really mean? That you want to be more European or more part of, let's call it the Anglo world, or whatever it is that validates you? Is that really a success? Do we need to have a voice? I'm sorry, don't we need to have a voice of our own? I transcribed it, so I made a few typos. That's one of the comments that's in the thing, in the article. Another email I got from somebody said, would be interested to talk to you about the post-Chicano curatorial take, which I'm researching and find disturbing. That's by a very well-known art historian who will go nameless. And then I did a Wikipedia search. Chicano art. The preferred media for Chicano art are murals and graphic arts. See also lowrider art. Which I clicked and was pretty cool. Then I had to do a little historical search. Ruben Salazar, 1972. A Chicano is a Mexican-American with a non-Anglo image of himself. Ruben Salazar, as you may or may not know, was killed by police in a riot in 1972 and was a person I'd worked on in other projects previously. And then lastly, kind of my favorite, given some of the tenor of the article, and you'll get just maybe this will prick your interest to go read it. It talks a lot about the Chicano Now show, which will also be on view nearby. And I'm just going to read one little description of that. And again, these are just things for you to think about. If you weren't here in the morning, that sort of are things that are in the air, I think, in the moment, at this moment. Chicano Now explodes stereotypes, inspiring an appreciation of Chicano achievements and contributions. Chicano Now emphasizes that every kid has a chance and a choice. Chicano Now introduces Chicano expressions to the uninitiated, allowing them to experience the impact and joy of Chicano contributions to the American mainstream. And that is written by the Chicano Now team, which is content collaborators, Hispanic Scholarship Fund, and Cheech Marin. And lastly, I just was mentioning some of these issues that I was thinking about. What am I going to do here? How can I frame this that we can even begin this conversation without having to do a seminar first? And I had someone say, describe it, the project, meaning my project, which I'm about to describe to you, as an operation, as a proposition. And I found that very useful because I think reading those criticisms, even though they're probably directed, one hopes they're more directed at the curators and not at the artists, but there is the possibility that it could be directed at me as well, and just sort of taking on that possibility that we are in a context in which the work may rub against people in the wrong way, may be inaccessible in some way, may seem elitist, may seem exciting, may seem like an exciting new turn in events, could be a number of different responses. So I wanted to sort of lay out this idea very, very simply of what I had set out to do, to restate it, describe it, the project, as an operation, as a proposition. So what was the proposition of my project? The proposition was basically, and I'll get to how I got there, that there was a history of lynching in California that most people didn't know about it or still don't know about it, and that I wanted to raise that awareness, but I also wanted to raise awareness of the fact that you don't know about it, right? And that's a very different question than just telling you, I could stand up here and read off 353 names of people that were, of Mexicans and Mexican Americans that were lynched in California by a number of different communities, including Latinos, Chinese, Anglos, and a number of other sort of smaller ethnic groups as well. But that wouldn't really do much to change our understanding of the experience of that, because lynching is a very violent history that has already a significant place in our nation's history, and that is obviously closely linked to African American history and African American struggles. Latinos lynched in California is only 352. That's basically less than 10% of the known numbers for African Americans. So it's not claiming some sort of new victim status or trying to take that on. But it is trying to say that there is a history, and it's a history, American history. It's really the first American history of racial violence, and it's directed at a different group. And what happened in between, let's say, 1850 and 1880, when African Americans began to be lynched? Most of us can look at our American history and realize that the Civil War happens, and that does change the direction and the intention of racial violence, also status of California. So with a set of those questions I set out, first of all, and one of the things that we talked a lot about in the morning session was what is different about these artists today? What are they up to? What's going on? And I think we heard even in the first presentation, this idea of research, of scholarship, of going back and looking at sites, thinking about space. Certainly my project is very much about space and microspaces and all kinds of different sorts of spaces. So the first thing I had to do was actually figure out what the statistics were. I knew that there were some lynchings of Latinos. I had seen those in your standard Western history book. But I was looking for something that would tell me, 8%, 10%, 5%. Just something I could quote and put in the footnote and move on, right? And I kept looking through all these books and reading all these incredibly horrible Western Frontier books, probably written like sixth grade or whatever. Incredibly bad bad text. And just taking notes through the text and keeping track of cases and accounts, if they gave a city, if they gave a year, if they gave anything. And then I would go back to the newspapers and look through the newspapers. So in the end, I ended up reading the Los Angeles Star, which was our local paper here in LA, from 1850 to 1870. And so in order to find it, because these three books, if you go to the library and look them up, the only book that will have this history is my book. And so I couldn't go to the library and look this up in the sense that we might be used to thinking about research. I had to go and reread all the newspapers. So I had to do that day by day because there's no index for something like that. Mm-hmm. And that those old newspapers are no longer handleable because the paper is so fine. So you have to read the microphone. So I don't know if you've ever read a microphone. It's very painful. You're squinting, your eyes are focused, you're turning this little reel. And I had to read every single day for 20 years and basically make notes, cross-reference the notes. And then I did that with San Francisco and Sacramento and a couple other cities as well. That is, as an artistic practice, I think of that as an artistic practice, right? Now, some people may not think of that. They might say, well, you should be drawing. You should get out the paints. And I've done painting and drawing. I've done all that. I still do that. But I would say my practice is extended beyond just those. I still have those things in my toolbox. I still do those things. But I also have other tools that I've acquired along the way. I acquired them through going to graduate school, which was an opportunity I had that my father didn't have, and one that I wanted to take advantage of, and I'm glad that I did. I'm now a professor, tenured, department chair, Board of College Art Association. I mean, when we look at those criticisms, we have to keep in mind that things have changed for many of us, and we are in a changing environment, and change happens, and it's 30 years since Blackman did the last show. I think we want to think about that. It might be another 30 years before this happens again, We want to make sure we say what we came here to say, and that we try to address the issues that we want to. So the research, eventually, I come up with this case list of all the cases. I eventually find the book that claims it has the data. It tells me a number that is so completely wrong. I can see it because I already have notes that are far greater than that. And I realize I've got to do something with this project. I then begin to travel to different museums, and there are museum collections and archival photo collections in every city that you possibly live in. Even small local towns have little collections in their library, a little drawer somewhere you can go through. And you have to get in the car or fly somewhere and do that to a lot of different places. And you call simple search Library of Congress, which if you haven't been to the site, is great. You can look up anything, and you can order a print for $20 of anything that's in the Library of Congress as a citizen. It's one of your rights. But when you look up Latino, they don't have anything because it didn't exist. Look up Chicano, it doesn't. The search engines, we've changed the term so many times, right? Hispano, Chicano, Hispanic, Latino, California. What are you going to search for? So you can't search for anything. All you can look for is ethnic, and then you get a folder with everybody. And then you have to go through all the folders, and basically one by one, go through boxes and boxes and boxes, looking for images that might have a reference to it. So I started looking for images, photographic images of lynching in California. This was after, I was already a year into this project when the lynching exhibition with the collection of Southern lynching images or American lynching images of African Americans was being organized and displayed, and I didn't know about it because I was living out here and found out about it a bit later. And there's only 5 cases in that in California, by the way, in the catalog. So I started looking for the images, and I was really looking for California. I was looking for Latinos, but I did not find very many. So the images that I did find are all from the West, mostly California. Some, a couple are probably Texas-Mexico border, somewhere in there. Some of them are not identified in the original archives. And then, as you probably noticed if you've seen the exhibition, I then removed the body from the photograph. So one of the reasons I did that was because I had looked at the book of the African American lynchings, and I found it to be an unpleasant experience for me to do. I felt that was something that I didn't want to put people through. I didn't feel that was a necessary journey for the project I was doing. What makes my project different from a historical book is precisely that I would claim this as an artistic decision, that I want you to focus. Yes, I'm taking historical material, but I want you to focus on my gesture, my action. As you would if I was painting, you'd look at the beautiful brushstroke, the line, the serpentine line that harkened back to the 18th century and Olmsted and all of those people. Well, this is the same thing. With conceptual work, we're looking for the trace of the artist's hand. Where can I find the artist's hand in this object, in this thing? In this case, you're finding that trace very subtly in the missing hand, right? In the absent figure, in the absent presence, as it were. And from there, I then assembled a collection of them, which is about 15 of the postcards, all of which the bodies were erased except for, there's 2 which I showed the back of, the backs of the postcards, just so that in case you weren't familiar with this history, you would at least recognize that it was about the history of postcards. And they were then, I then reproduced them as postcards, but instead of having the lynched body in them, they literally opened a discursive space in the back, where you could write racist things should you want to, but you're not obliged to. Right, and that's the idea, that freedom to have a space in which you could determine your relationship to that object, to that history, was one of the things that I wanted to draw attention to, which is why I kept them in the scale of the originals and why I kept them in sort of a series. These are not in any particular order, so I'll just go with the flow, but there's more of the postcards coming up. The other component of the art of this project was, so, and it's all happening at the same time, I'm researching on the cases, I still was finding more from the time I started the book. I had 150, which was already 3 times the known number of any other book published. So I started from there, but I kept looking. In the end, I had 7 times the known number. And there are still more cases. The case is not complete, case list is not complete. There are more cases that need to be included that other people need to research and find for their own regions, other communities that need to be addressed as well. Certainly I have Chinese, I addressed all of the cases I found, not just Mexican Americans and Latinos. Anglos, there's 1 Swiss, 1 Belgian, a couple Italians, so there was a wide range. But overall, statistically, persons of Mexican and Mexican-American descent were the largest group. So from there, I decided, which was a little bit of a burden to spend, basically to be working on a project nobody else knew about. And most historians and scholars didn't believe me when I would tell them about the project. It's a crazy artist. So it was a very sort of lonely period in a way in terms of having people to talk to about a project that I was working on. So I started deciding I needed to have an artistic outlet. And I began taking the case. At one point, I just was reading this case, sitting in a dark room looking at microfilm. I mean, you're surrounded by darkness. There's death. They're doing all kinds of these things to these people that are not your actual relatives, but you're sort of, cultural relatives. You can relate to their histories on some level. And I just realized, that's not that far away. I'm gonna get in the car. I'm gonna put my camera in the back of the car, and I'm gonna go looking for it. And I started driving around and just driving to all the sites. And basically, I took all of the case lists that I had, and I started going back through them again and looking for descriptions. Was it an oak tree? Was it a pine tree? Was it near the city hall? Was it near the county jailhouse? And just hop in the car and would go as long as I could. Maybe after class, hop in the car. Before my next have a day, I have 12 hours. I have 2 days. I have a weekend. I didn't care. I'm just going. I'm gonna just go see what I can find. Now, the historical records, certainly in the 20th century, are quite complete. I found the exact trees in those cases. But in the 19th century, they're very incomplete. They didn't really care where they hung Mexicans, and they didn't keep track of that. That's not my fault, right? That doesn't make me a bad scholar, because they didn't write down where they killed the Mexicans. So I took that as a... Now, how do I make that point in an artwork? I make that point by I take the journey as far as their description led me, and when it runs out, then that's where I look for a photo for a tree that could have been in that place. So this one is in a valley in which there was a lynching, there was a case, and there aren't a lot of trees there, and there weren't a lot of trees there 100 years ago. So is it the exact tree? How can you say it's not? I mean, maybe I can't say it is, you can't say it's not. So we're in a place where we're dealing with, and that's, I know I only have now a minute left, that's where we get into the critique of the photographic process itself. Does photography tell us the truth? Is photography a kind of coded lie in which we are comforted by the cultural mores we all have? And I'm sure every one of you, when you think about a California landscape, you think of it as race neutral, as this beautiful place in which we can all wander freely. Well, there were always Mexicans in the landscape, or Indians, or Chinese, or Italians, or whatever. All these different communities within the landscape. Today, as you drive through beautiful California, behind each beautiful mountain is a prison somewhere. It's over 300, growing number of prison, 8 million people or whatever it is, prison population. I think I'm out of time. And then the billboard project, which was at LAXR, just brought the history back to the streets of LA. So you're driving on from the 10 freeway, you could see this tree hovering over the city of Los Angeles. And I don't think I put in the night shot, but at night it was beautiful because it was all dark and just this glowing tree. And just talking about the sacred memory in place and reclaiming space in place. And the last one is just have a couple details here. It's from a public art project I just completed. It's 84th in Vermont. It's open to the public. It'll be up forever. Should you want to go down to South Central, it's a really interesting building. And for that one, I did a series of 4 photo murals. This one, the largest one, is 60 feet tall by 20 feet wide. It's a photographic process that's brand new, and it's funded by the County of Los Angeles, and it will be up forever. And basically, the center there is at the site of the riots in 92. The buildings were burned down and empty for 10 years. And I wanted to try and address some of the trauma of the site and of the clients of the building. And I could answer more questions about that when we have the after session. Thank you.